This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW, because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour, the boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast, real quick, Texter. Can you guys remind me the name of the water polo tight end? That would be Kahale Waring. Texter says we can't be wasting draft picks on those kinds of guys. Yes, they can't be wasting draft picks on bad football players, the Texans.
Well, okay. Now, he was a fourth-round pick. Third-round pick.
Yeah, he was a third-round pick.
Yeah, that was a wasted pick. That was upside and potential for a guy that had transitioned from water polo to college football and had a whole lot of upside. Real good physique. Looked good in a water polo uniform more so than a football uniform, I would
guess. You could have created an army of Kahale Warings, we could take over the world from Houston, Texas, you know?
A third-round pick has about a 33% chance of becoming a consistent starter, so... It's hard. Third round is where you start to get into. There's no such thing as a third round bust.
Yeah.
The Texans for years. What made it frustrating with Kahale Waring is for years they were not hitting on their third round picks. It was very, very frustrating, and it got to the point where it seemed like all of them were third rounders who were really physically gifted, but just didn't seem like they actually cared for football all that much.
It was
much.
A meme, that, dude. It was
was frustrating. That was frustrating. But in any given year, it's hard to say a third rounder is a bust because it's a crapshoot by the time. And then especially in the fourth round.
He was a bust. I mean, remember when he got cut, he got let go from here, and he wound up on like four different teams in like 13 days? Like there were literally three teams that brought him in and cut him like 2 days later.
But it's still not a bust. Like, there's almost nothing that can make a third rounder a bust. There's just no the odds are against you with any third rounder.
I'm not here to debate the semantics of what's the definition of a bust.
Because you're gonna lose.
I'm merely pointing out the fact that like he was an extreme. Did not work out.
Nobody saw
value enough to keep him in the building for more than a week after he was let go from here. Like, it was just, it's crazy. No, I get what you're saying. Like, third round, if he was a first round pick, that's a bust for sure. Here's Joe Espada, Astros manager. He's happy for Alex Bregman and his newfound wealth.
I'm happy for Alex. I know the news are not official yet, but I'm happy for him. He made his decision, so now it's time for all of us just to move forward and turn the page.
Yeah, that's true. He's not here anymore, man. Now Dana Brown seemed a little more salty when was asked about Bregman stuff. Here was Dana Brown. We just got three Dana Brown cuts here that'll take a total of about 40 seconds. He was asked about Bregman's deal. What do you think?
I've heard about it. I don't think it's official yet, but I won't comment on that.
Okay, but give us something, though, Dana. Give us something here.
If it's true, I'm happy for Bregman. You know, he had a great run here. That's all pretty much I can say about it.
All right, okay, so that's all you can say about it. But how engaged were you with Bregman at the end of these negotiations?
You know, as I said before, you know, we've had a lot of internal discussions, and I'll leave it at that. how engaged was Jim? Like I said, I'll leave it at that.
How engaged was Jim was that question? I think that might have been Chandler asking that.
I think Dana Brown, I don't think he's ever going to get caught with any kind of a tampering or any kind of CBA violation. He's very, very careful about what he can and can't say, what he's allowed to say. I wonder if he rubbed up against it and got a warning or something at some point previously.
I would doubt that only because he hasn't been in a real front-facing position like this before where he would be available to comment like that.
He's almost like a more understated Baghdad Bob. Like Bregman's going to be in Boston, you know, making promises about winning a championship and everything. And Dana's like, well, no, the fight is not over. Yes. We are still potentially going to possibly sign Alex Bregman.
Yeah. Baghdad Bob. Remember that guy?
Kids, Baghdad Bob was a guy that in Desert Storm in the first Gulf War, as Americans were actively taking over Baghdad, a spokesperson for the Iraqi government, Baghdad Bob, was insisting that they were winning the war.
Yeah, all is well. Like, what a time, man.
That war lasted all of about 3 hours.
What a time.
And Baghdad Bob was insisting that everything was going great.
He was like
Kevin Bacon at the end of Animal House.
Right. Remain calm, all is well, while you're getting steamrolled by civilians. Yeah, man, it's a little sad that social media was not around for Baghdad Bob.
He still pops up in a GIF every now and then.
In the moment when he's doing his thing, man, like that was something else.
Hey, by the way, in terms of the pronunciation of GIF or JIF, one of our listeners pointed out that the guy who invented the GIF does pronounce it JIF. So... Yeah,
I
think he's wrong. I think he's a classic one of these computer nerds that it's good at the math but awful at the verbal.
Because the G stands for graphic, right?
Right.
Okay. I've used
brilliant
both.
Mathematician doesn't do acronyms all that well. That's all.
I've used both, but I used GIF that one day, and you were all up in my business, man. Like you were defending
stop.
The honor of the pronunciation of the GIF. I'm just joking.
You might be right about Kahale Waring being a bus. Yeah, 7 total targets in his career. That's all right. I'm going to give you that.
Okay.
And they all came in his rookie season. In a 4-year career, in a 2-year career, he had 7 total targets.
Targets, not even catches. Yeah. Like
well, 3 receptions.
Oh, wow. A 42%
catch rate. Yeah.
Caught a few of them. Oh, man. Hey,
11.7 yards per reception. That's good for a tight end.
Okay, for tight end. Yeah, that's, boy, he was really stretching the field on those three catches. I'm a little upset with Chandler Rome, Seth, and it's over a Bregman thing. And ironically, this was not even something I discovered on my own by reading Chandler's stuff on The Athletic, which I do. I think Chandler does a great job covering the Astros. Let me say that. I think he's excellent. I think he's done a good job reporting things. He's gotten into that breaking news realm as well. He was the one that broke the Bregman news. All the big nugget hussies in baseball had to cite at Chandler_Rome or whatever his X handle is. He's doing a great job. However, in this particular article, which he wrote earlier this week, and it's sort of a history of Alex Bregman with the Astros and exactly what we're going to be missing. He cited a story, an anecdote, from back in July of 2016 when Alex Bregman was a guest on The Triple Threat starring Sean Pendergast, Rich Lord, and Ted Johnson. When we had Bregman on our show, he was in AAA at the time and he was killing it. He destroyed AA for a few weeks, was killing it in AAA, and it was very evident he was going to get a call-up pretty soon. For whatever reason, the Astros gave him to us to do an interview. We're really happy about it. You know, I think we probably asked for it. And that, you got to keep in mind, that was still at a stage where the Astros had not won a World Series yet. If you go back and listen to 610 in like the 2014 through 2016 days, we got a lot of Astro guests because they were still kind of climbing back onto the radar at that point.
Yeah, you know? Want them, you got them. There you go.
We had Altuve on a few times. Like now it's a lot tougher if you're not the flagship. But at any rate, so in that interview, I asked Bregman towards the end of the interview, hey, when you were a kid growing, you're a real baseball junkie. When you were a kid growing up and you dreamt of your first at-bat in the big leagues, who did you envision it being against? And I was expecting him to say, you know, Justin Verlander or, you know, Randy Johnson.
Find out later his mom was a Yankees fan or,
just who did you dream about? You know, everybody's got that dream. You're standing in the batter's box. Who was pitching to you? And his answer was interesting because he goes, I don't know, but they're probably wearing a gray and red uniform.
Yeah.
And I'm like thinking, and I pull up the schedule and I'm looking, I hit mute to Rich and Ted. I'm like, they play the Angels this coming weekend. I think he's telling us this is when he's getting the call up. And yeah. And that kind of was what he was implying with that answer. We didn't think it would turn into a big deal or anything like that. We talked about it for a little bit after we got done with him and whatnot. Yada, yada, yada. He doesn't get called up till the following week to face off against the Yankees. And at that point, the rumor had been that him being so cocky and brash on our show about when he was getting called up, that this was sort of a like a Belichick type punishment. Like, oh, you're going to tell us when you're coming up. Okay.
Like, yeah. Or you're giving away even before you're actually here, you're giving up information about what our lineup's going to be. Yeah.
Right. So that's the anecdote. And it was one of the better moments on our show back then on the Triple Threat. So Chandler Rome, the very first paragraph on this story that he's doing about Bregman, says on July 19th, 2016, a cocksure, can't-miss prospect phoned a Houston sports radio station. That radio station
vague.
Was Sports Radio 610, man. How hard is it?
Yeah.
It's fewer letters and numbers to type Sports Radio 610 than a Houston sports radio station. I'm continuing. The Astros sat amid a slog of a season, staggered by a 17-28 start, yet still within striking distance in the AL West. Summoning a spark seemed logical, so Bregman lit the fuse. Toward the end of Bregman's interview, hosts asked him to envision the pitcher against whom he may make his Major League debut. The three of us did not ask the question like a barbershop quartet.
Yeah.
There was one host asking the question, and his name was Sean T. Pendergast, all right?
Oh, okay.
So, and I'm being a little selfish right now, but yes, it was me. Now, what's funny about this is, you know who was most agitated by Chandler not citing the station or the hosts by name?
Yeah, who was it?
Rich Lord, who texted me about this yesterday.
Hey, did you guys hear?
Rich
I'm impressed that Rich is still paying for a subscription to The Athletic.
Sports fan?
I know, but he's staying it tough. That's a kind of a, you know, it's not as expensive as it used to be, but it's still, you're plunking down money for a pay site for their quality content.
It's a great value. The Athletic would be one of the, if I had to cancel all my subscriptions.
It's a great value unless you're worried about proper citations.
Thank you, Seth. That's right, I do have the opportunity to cancel my subscription.
I'm just glad that he didn't phrase it. A sports radio, which was not one of four other sports radio stations and 978 that are, this was a sports radio station.
Yeah.
He didn't put it as obtusely as sometimes he puts his various rankings.
Okay, he gets a little wordy. Okay, do you think, so that begs the question, do you think, because I think overall, like Chandler, I think Chandler does a really good job covering the Astros, but sometimes you and I kind of poke fun at how he frames really numeric type of things, like instead of
and
saying
it's mostly because it's usually me at 4 a.m. trying to figure out, like, okay, he'll say like, well, the Astros woke up this morning with the six teams having a worse ERA than they have in the bullpen of the pitchers who aren't pitching in the first six innings.
Instead of saying, tell me that the
bullpen is the seventh worst in the last couple weeks.
Instead of saying, as of Tuesday, they're 23rd in bullpen ERA, right?
Yeah.
It's 3 cents. So we poke fun at him for that. Amidst saying he's excellent at his job, do you think? Well, we'll get to ask him. I'm going to ask him when we go to West Palm Beach. Hey, man,
why'd you know? No, this is where I stand on this. Like earlier, I cited some stat that Matt Kawahara from the Chronicle had put in the paper, and I forgot to say Matt Kawahara.
He's their Astros beat writer for those.
Yeah. I think I just, I don't worry that much about it because I screw it up myself. You're very good about it. I can see you getting pissy about this because you are annoyingly
citation guy.
Yeah, it's like you'll sit there and be like, oh, hold on a second. Let me look up this name of this Seattle Mariners Bleacher Report writer. Hold on. It's only going to take 45 seconds. I want to be sure that this blogger gets his due on Houston Sports Radio. Yes. I'm like, Sean, okay. I don't care. He doesn't care. Nobody cares. Okay. Read the damn quote.
I am like that. You're right. Usually it's when it's national podcasts playing audio, where we play audio from. But you are right.
But you're not a hypocrite about this.
No. Exactly.
It almost does feel, the fact that he mentions the sports radio station several times without ever slumming down to go down into the, you know, talk radio. These writers all love to believe that somehow they're the bastion of all that's pure in sports reporting. They've completely abandoned citing two sources for anything. But they're the ones that are, they hold the flag for integrity in journalism, not those blowhards on radio that just talk out their wazoos all day.
Right.
Well, I'm sorry you weren't born with a personality, Mr. Sports Writer. Yeah.
Yes. Am I a bad team player that I'm more agitated with the hosts asked him to envision the picture than I am him not citing the station?
As far as when it comes to the host, he might have gone back and listened to the interview, but not, yeah, he doesn't know the voices or anything. So he has almost, he has to make the decision, like, all right, do I have to send this to somebody to figure out who this is asking the question?
I'm surprised
you might not know your voice.
I'm surprised you're not more agitated by this, because I feel like this is something that would be more up your alley than my alley. He says hosts asked him the question. That means that three hosts on the show were asking him this question. It's literally incorrect. In unison.
You guys did. You found it.
Right. No, I was the soprano. Rich was the baritone. And then Ted gave the real low baritone. We're like, oh, hey there, Alex. Did you envision a picture in gray and red? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. You should ask the listeners on this one.
Yeah,
put him on the Jim Adler text line. Is Sean being a little too prima donna-ish on this one?
If we're being honest, if we can just unpack these last 6 minutes, I'm really the only one that cares about this. The listeners don't. I'm the one looking for citation. I think you and everybody else are like, Sean, why are you pining so hard for this right now?
You know, or somewhere when I was in high school, I'd read something about, you know, not caring about getting credit for the things you've done, just try to do
screw
it purely.
That. Yeah.
So I've really... And maybe it's just because I'm lazy and I don't like having extra junk around the house. I really don't care about trophies or anything else like that. And I try not to care about people saying, like, whether or not people say nice things about me.
Yeah.
It's hard, you know, because your ego always wants to step in. So I try not to complain about not getting credit for things. I try to be a good, I don't know.
Yeah, you don't complain about it. I don't know if you actually, inside you're
seething,
burning.
Yeah. No, I try real hard not to give a damn about it.
All right. We had five questions that we were looking for answers for in the Nick Caley, D'Amico Ryan's press conference. We laid them out yesterday. We even laid out how we thought they would answer them. How did they answer them? The five big questions from Payne and Pendergast we needed answers to. How did these guys do yesterday, Nick Caley and D'Amico Ryan's? We'll discuss that next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hey, Seth, real quick, you should feel good, according to one texter. Not being worried about getting credit for things is a trait of some of the best leaders out there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, that would be cool if I were actually a good leader. But
you're a good leader. What are you talking about?
Thank you. Brandy pointed out a hypocrisy of mine, which was I'm not infallible in this. I try really hard not to care about whether I get credit for things or not.
Yeah.
I try to just focus on, okay, did I accomplish my objective? That's what matters.
Right.
And she did point out, and this was early in my radio career, that I'd made a joke on the radio one day, and then that evening, a basketball commentator who I love and who has local roots just used that exact same joke.
Thieved it from you.
And it bothered me that I saw people talking about how brilliant he was to come up with that joke and everything. That did bother me. Now, that was at a point where I was like, I think I was more insecure about things. I was trying to establish myself. And so I look back on that, and I wish I hadn't gotten so... If anything, I should have been flattered, but it got to me. It got the envy and the jealousy creeped in. Because, look, a joke is a joke.
Right.
It's going to get retold.
Sure.
And so I think I would handle it differently these days. Like when Ross Tucker stole my take... a couple, like last year about something, I can't remember what it was. We joked about it, but it didn't bother me.
Cause
for one, Ross told me, he's like, I am going to steal that.
Yeah.
And then he used it like on, I think when he was hosting the Jim Rome show or something, he used it. So I think I've grown in that regard.
Yes.
But Brandy did. She wanted to make you feel better. That like, don't think that Seth is some saint or something when it comes to not wanting credit.
That's good. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to this. We had a handful of questions that we talked about yesterday in the final segment of the show that we wanted to hear answers from from Nick Caley and D'Amico Ryan's. First, why this job when you've been either offered or a person of interest in jobs both in New York and New England? What appealed to you about Houston, Nick Caley?
Because of the people. Starting from ownership, Coach Ryan's, to Nick, to the people, to the players, to the staff that we have here. I feel really convicted in that. And I think, you know, you got to get the right people on the bus, and we have the right people on the bus, and I'm really excited about that.
It is crazy. Like, we're 2 years removed from this place being like, who would ever go there? And now you've got the, you know, one of the more highly sought after, one of the more well thought of,
yeah,
for sure, offensive coordinator candidates listing basically everybody in the building as a sheer joy to come to work with every day.
Okay, now this is one thing that I found interesting. Him using that phrase, the right people on the bus, that's kind of a common metaphor that people use, you know, a bus metaphor about a team and everything. But we know that one of D'Amico's favorite books that he keeps on his shelf behind him is The Energy Bus.
Oh, yeah.
But hold on a second. I got to be sure I get the author right, Sean. It's John Gordon, by John Gordon.
Good job, yeah. Seth. Yes.
Yeah, he can send me my affiliate, my Amazon affiliate commission later on.
Yep.
The energy bus, that's a big part about it, is being sure that everybody on the bus has the same goals, the same attitude, all of that stuff. And I wonder if Kaylee did a little due diligence before the interview and found out that D'Amico read and keeps the energy bus
key
in his office.
Key buzzwords, yes.
Yeah, which I would respect if he did that kind of, if he
little
had that
earworms
kind of foresight.
Yes.
And it's one of these cool self-help motivational books, self-improvement, I'll call it, self-improvement books, that only takes about 45 minutes to read.
Yeah.
So it's not like it would have detracted from his job as a Rams coach in doing
True. All right, so that's answer number one. I like that answer. Good answer. Number two, what's the plan for the offensive line? And just as we predicted, Seth, the offensive line became not just a one-question thing, but really like a three- or four-question thing for Nick Kaley. But this was the first time he was asked about it in the press conference yesterday.
I think it all starts up front, obviously, and it's really all 11. I mean, we all got to be in sync, and I think protection starts, obviously, with communication, with trust and communication, cohesiveness up front, and really having clear, you know, rules in the protection system. So we're going to, you know, we'll be going through that process. Obviously, I got a, you know, history with Cole, dating back to my time in New England when he was our offensive line coach, and I coached the tight end, so I have a really good working relationship and a level of trust with Cole. He's a very good football coach, and I'm excited to go through this process with him.
Yeah, there were a lot of things last year when they broke down in pass protection that started with either poor communication or a poor understanding of exactly what guys' responsibilities were supposed to be on any given play. And it was glaringly obvious at times that, all right, this is either a mental error or a communication breakdown. But there were multiple times, both in the pass protection and in the run game, where you could tell that guys were using different, like the footwork. One guy was blocking outside zone while everybody else was blocking inside zone,
yeah,
or what have you. Yeah, it's kind of a problem.
That's an issue.
So it was nice hearing the word cohesiveness at least a couple times.
Yep.
He really hammered the fundamentals. He said we're going to be a team that's rooted primarily in the fundamentals. And it is something, Sean. It's when you go to work with kids at camps, and this is at every sport I can ever remember. I can remember as a wrestler going to wrestling camps all the time, and the college and the Olympic wrestlers just telling you all the things that you don't want to hear as a kid, that like, listen, no, it's the boring stuff. We do right. The boring stuff. And you're like, no, show me all the really cool moves. And they're like, no, it's not about the cool moves. It's about your single leg takedown. It's over and over and over and over and over again. Drill, 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 drill. And it doesn't matter what your scheme is or how great your game plan is. If guys aren't practicing good fundamentals and executing good fundamentals, none of it matters. And it's a theme that really came out in listening to Nick Kaley talk that I really liked was, man, this is a guy who at the very core of it just wants his players to be well coached, to have the technique that they can execute whatever he's asking them to do. You go back to the Patriots, and when they were so good offensively, obviously Tom Brady is a big part of it. But one of the reasons they could be a good game plan offense, and I think he used that phrase yesterday, a game plan offense. We heard that from Bill O'Brien when he first got here. One of the reasons they could do that was that the offensive line had such good fundamentals that, yeah, on they might be an outside zone offense one particular week. And then the next week, they're going to be running duo and gap scheme and other stuff that's completely different. But because they had good fundamentals, they could change from week to week. And I do think that was a weakness of Bill O'Brien's offense, is that they He knew how to scheme against different opponents, but I don't think that they were a fundamentally sound football team with Bill O'Brien, and that's one of the things that kept them from being a genuinely good offense.
I was surprised there wasn't more negative reaction to him actually using the words game plan offense in the press conference yesterday, based on Bill O'Brien leaning on that for years here in Houston.
And we came, you know, there was a little bit, I didn't even want to bring this up, but there's some similarities to moving on from Gary Kubiak and then Bill O'Brien coming in, and when he said game plan offense, people got super excited.
Yeah.
Because Kubiak, it's a lot of, like in a Kubiak-Shanahan, a classic scheme, it's a whole lot of like, listen, we're not going to change the offense that much versus any given opponent. So people were really excited to hear like, oh no, it's going to be different from week to week. And then yesterday, same thing. People
same
got
thing.
Excited. They're like, yeah,
same
yeah.
Thing.
So, but what Nick Caley would tell you is it's all about the execution.
Yes.
At the end of the day, yes, that's what we're going to do. We're going to be more of a game plan offense, but it only works if you got the fundamentals nailed down.
All right. Why this job? Plan for the offensive line. Those are the first two. The third question we were looking forward to hearing. Just what's he think of CJ Stroud? CJ scouting report.
Yeah, I mean, he can spin it. He throws the ball. He's an accurate thrower of the football. He's a natural thrower of the football. He's instinctive. He's got the it factor, and he's a warrior in terms of his competitiveness. And I've admired him dating back to his college days. So I'm really, really excited to have an opportunity to work with him.
Yeah, he didn't really get into specifics either time that he talked about CJ Stroud. I mean, that sounded like just very much like the nice things that you would say about a quarterback. I think he leaned into the toughness in one of the other sound bites. I don't think that Caley is really, he hasn't spent nearly the amount of time watching the film and looking at specifics right now as he's probably comfortable with. And I think it would have been cool, but I didn't expect him to give up and give a detailed explanation for exactly what went right and what was good last year and what they can build into. I think he's going to have the next few weeks is going to be just a whole lot of him getting to know the personnel on the offense.
Yeah, I thought it was the perfect introductory press conference answer to what do you think of CJ Stroud? He's obviously very excited. That's got to be a huge. I know he talked about all the people in the building. The opportunity to work with C.J. Stroud versus the jobs he said no to, you know, New England and New York, where you're working with, you would have been working with Drake May, an unproven rookie, and if he took the Jets job this year, who the hell knows who he'd be working with? We know it's not Aaron Rodgers anymore. They walked away, those two sides walked away from each other yesterday. Let's get the last two in here real quick. These were both for DeMeco. We wanted to hear what DeMeco would say about firing Bobby Slowik.
Yeah, it was very hard to let Bobby go. Bobby's a really close friend, as you all know. Bobby's a great friend of mine. When I got into coaching, Bobby was the guy who helped me figure it all out. And we were QCs together there in San Fran, so really long relationship there with him. Nothing but love and admiration for Bobby and what he's done. I know he'll be a really good coach in this league as he continues to press forward in his career, and I wish him nothing but the best.
Yeah, I thought that DeMeco was a little bit more open than I expected on a couple of the Bobby Slowik answers.
Yep.
And that one especially, just we had wondered, all right, does DeMeco really have it in him to fire a guy that he's good friends with? And he obviously did. And I think that, I know people speculate and wonder, okay, was this actually driven by the McNairs or Casera or whomever else? I thought by way of the positives that he said, the positive things he said about Nick Caley, a lot of the positives were the things that are like the direct opposite of what we saw from Bobby Slowik this year. I think that DeMeco very clearly looked at it and thought, Bobby's just not ready for this, and he was not able to adapt, because DeMeco brought up adapting and adjusting a couple times. That was a big weakness of Bobby Slowik this year, was not adapting and adjusting to things like seeing a whole bunch of cover two.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I think it was probably really hard for him on a personal level, but it was what had to be done.
Yeah, you nailed it. I thought his answer for that was way longer than I thought it would be, and way more insightful than I thought it would be. Last one, this one won't take long. Hey, DeMeco, what's going on with the Stephon Diggs potential contract extension?
We won't get into specifics on free agents. Like, that's a process that'll take its time, so I won't get into specifics on different guys.
Okay.
So the important thing to note there is that Stephon Diggs is not actually a free agent yet.
He's a Houston Texan still.
Yeah, his contract could void on Monday if they don't do something new with it, but he's not a free agent. So I don't know. I don't know if that's a little bit of a Freudian slip there or something, but I don't know. I'm not optimistic that Stephon Diggs is going to have a new deal
I'm not
before
either.
Monday.
If I pick, look, there's a lot going on with Diggs. If I had to pick one or the other, are you more optimistic or are you optimistic or pessimistic about Stephon Diggs coming back here? That clearly makes me pessimistic. You know, like there's nothing about that. If I had to choose one, like there's nothing about that. I'm like, oh yeah, Diggs is for sure coming back. He didn't refer to him by name and called him a free agent, but he's definitely coming back.
I do feel optimistic that Stephon Diggs will keep an open mind about free agency. And I don't feel like Diggs would be overly upset with the Texans for not giving him a huge offer before he hits free agency. Especially with a guy who's an aging wide receiver, I think the Texans might think, you know what, Diggs needs to go out there and see what his market value is because we want him to feel good about it.
Like he got value.
Yeah, if he comes back here, that he's not going to have second guesses about whether he should have tested the market
or not. Yeah, maybe. Hey, listen to Sports Radio 610 on the Odyssey app for an hour each day for your entry into the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest. If you're the winner, you and three friends could be on your way to Circa in Las Vegas for an awesome sports viewing time there during the college basketball tournament. Their stadium swim is amazing. Their big swimming pool they have where you can watch all the games on the huge movie screens out there. It's really cool. Plus, you're getting an extra $20,000 in your pocket, which is not bad at all to spend while you're in Vegas. Just download the Odyssey app. Listen for an hour each day, just an hour. We prefer more, but just an hour gets you in each day. You get your daily entry into the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest. The Rockets lost last night. It was one of the weirder games of the year, and yet for a big reason, one of the most frustrating games of the year based on who was on the other side, and we'll explain coming up next.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah?
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you. The Rockets lose last night, 105-98 to the Golden State Warriors. One of the stranger games of the year. For whatever reason, the starters for the Rockets decided they could check out for the All-Star break with a game still to go before they leave for the Bay Area for the festivities, which I believe begin tonight for the All-Star weekend. The Futures game, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, is tonight. But it's All-Star weekend for the NBA out in the Bay Area. And they were bad. Like, they were awful. The Warriors... And early on, it wasn't even Steph Curry and Draymond and Jimmy Butler getting it done. Like, they had Moses getting it done, and the little dude with the curly hair and the headband, Poskrubski or whatever his name is, he was getting it. He had 14 in the first quarter, and they grew a big lead on the Rockets, and the Rockets' sloppiness had a lot to do with it. They were just sloppy, sloppy, sloppy. And for this was another one of those games where you look up in the middle of the second quarter. A lot like that Toronto game on Sunday that they actually won, which was also the second of a back-to-back. And they've got like 28 points midway through the third quarter. And so at one point in the first half, Ime Udoka just grabbed five bench guys and said, guys, you five, go in for those five. And he just swapped them all out. And the bench came in. A few guys in there that don't play very much, including Nate Williams, came in, did a good job. He cut into the lead, went on a 13-1 run. They go into the half. It's a much closer game than it was. A few minutes before that, come back out for the second half. Starters are back in. What happens? The Warriors expand the lead again. The starters are doing the same things they were doing in the first half. So Ime Udoka hit the red button much sooner in the second half than he did the first half and put a lineup in there that had Nate Williams and Jayshon Tate and Jock Landale and Aaron Holiday. He was running point all night because Fred VanVleet's out, but he was in there running the show. Jeff Green. It seems like every time you dust off Jeff Green, he comes in and does good things. And that five got them back in the game again. Largely, that five got it back to a two-point lead for the Warriors. But, Seth, it felt like one of those games where they couldn't get over the hump. It was one of those they expended so much energy getting back in the game that, you know, Steph hit you with a couple dagger threes. Eventually the crazy circus shots that Nate Williams is throwing up there aren't going in anymore. You know, Jeff Green, the sand ran out of the hourglass for Jeff Green. He wasn't hitting threes. So one of the more entertaining games, and at the bench, people were going crazy at Toyota Center over this. But in the end, it's still a loss. And it's a loss to not just the Warriors, but Steve Kerr, which is very annoying to me.
Yeah. Steve Kerr, who was at his whiniest yesterday when he spoke about her the night before.
Yeah.
Because they had back-to-back, and it was a late game, so they were going to get in it late. I guess that's the biggest thing is that, look, Udoka has been flat-out disgusted at times with the disappearance of the physicality and the aggressiveness that they showed so much of in the year 2024. Where in the year 2025, they've lost that. And I fully support him not putting the starters in again in the second half because they had their chance. He benched them in the first half. The backups came in and went on a 13-1 run. He puts them in again for the first 5 minutes of the third quarter, and it was the same old, same old. Yeah. So, like, nope, you've lost your playing privileges for the evening. I'm 100% okay with Udoka just leaving the backups in.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, there's no evidence in that game that the starters would have done anything except allow the Warriors to expand their lead again. Here's what Seth was talking about. This is what makes this loss annoying to me. Steve Kerr is one of the more annoying, whiny, insufferable people in sports to me, not just in basketball. This was Steve Kerr talking about a back-to-back as if it's something unique that was thrust upon the Warriors this week. Like, this is something that teams have to deal with all season long. And Steve Kerr, who, by the way, is choosing to do this after a loss to the Mavericks on Wednesday night. This was Steve Kerr complaining about the league going for TV ratings and whatnot.
Kind of a fatiguing game, late tip, you're flying tonight. I mean, can you go with all your veterans tomorrow?
I don't know. We'll talk to Rick after. So it's a tough back-to-back, and you know, that's why that's what makes this loss even more frustrating. Is that, you know, we gotta get into Houston at 3 o'clock, you know, whatever it is, because, you know, the NBA and its infinite wisdom makes us play an 8:45 game, and they clearly don't care about, you know, rest or player health. It's just ratings and all that stuff, so I get it. So everyone's got to do it. The whole league's got to do it. So it is what it is. We got to strap it up and get ready for tomorrow.
There's this element with me, Seth, where anything where guys are complaining about TV ratings and the league does this for TV, where there does need to be a reminder that these massive TV ratings and the television and media element are the reasons you get paid, whatever, $15 million a year to coach a basketball team.
And listen, Steve Kerr, let's not act like there aren't active discussions about this between the league and the teams and the players themselves and everything like that every year. But no, you had to whine about it because it was hurting you personally in that moment.
That's what bothers me about this loss, is you had a guy whining about the fact that his team even had to play this game, and then they come in and it was really an embarrassing game for the Rockets, the way they played in that game.
Right, you know, right. They did exactly what you might have expected the Warriors to look like. And it is. This is still, by and large, a very young basketball team. A lot of your key players are young. And when everything just evaporates, the energy, the ball movement, everything else, it's frustrating, especially when they're a team that They had one game where they were scrappy in the fourth quarter a couple nights ago. And then the next night, when you're the team that's at home facing a team that's been on the road, you get out-hustled and out-competed by that team. That's really frustrating.
You got out-hustled and out-competed by the dudes that back you up on your team that never play. That's embarrassing. Like, that Nate Williams comes into that game and gets whatever it was, 11 or 13 points in like 9 minutes, whatever it was. Like, he was on fire. Like, that, I mean, I know all the guys on the bench are happy for him, because, to the credit of the guys who were getting benched in that game, like, the starters were fired up when, you know, the Golden State's calling timeout and all the backups are coming off the floor. Like, everybody was super fired up about it. I think these guys all know they're not losing their jobs over this game. But there does need to be a level of embarrassment over how that game played out.
It's almost one of those games where I have no idea exactly what goes on in Udoka's head, obviously, but I could see it being one of those moments where you almost, as a coach, Udoka might have been upset if they had won with the backups, because he wants to be able to tell those guys, like, no, look, this is what happens. Yeah. If you guys don't want to be true professionals, I know everybody's heaping all this praise on you. Yep. You got all these yahoos like Seth Payne at the trade deadline saying, why would you trade for anybody? These guys are awesome. Yeah. How awesome do you feel right now?
It's funny.
Huh?
It's
funny. You couldn't go out there and I gave you two chances tonight to just go out and do your job.
Yeah.
And you turned it down each time.
We got texts earlier in the show like, hey, maybe the Rockets could use another veteran or whatever, and it's like...
I hate the version of myself from a couple weeks ago that acted like, trade deadline,
the answer is like, well, that guy ain't walking through that door. Like, the only new guys that can show up on the team are dudes that get bought out by their current teams, you know? Like, there was rumors like, hey, maybe the Rockets are going to be in on Ben Simmons. I'm like, God, no. No. You mean Ben Simmons, who we're not sure even likes basketball? Like, that Udoka wants that guy? No. All right.
Yeah.
Peyton Pendergast with you. We started doing something last week, and I think it's worth doing again. We're still kind of workshopping it, but a worst take of the week type segment. And last week, it was Ross Tucker's take about Yelp reviews, giving negative Yelp reviews to restaurants to try to keep them less crowded for reservations, basically. Like, you know, negative recommendations just so I can get a reservation. So that's the belt holder right now. Are any of these other bad takes that we heard this week from DeAndre Hopkins, Dak Prescott, Stephen A. Smith, do these rise to the level of Ross Tucker's restaurant take? So our worst take of the week segment is coming up next.